So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this International. I'm Pete. I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Special. We're back at it quicker than normal and just doing a special one for the holiday weekend. So I'm getting excited for Thanksgiving. To me, I don't know about you, but me personally, I'm a bigger Thanksgiving than Christmas fan. I think I always really have been, especially now.
As a kid, I would say Christmas was my jam because I've never been a big turkey guy.
Right.
But now as an adult, I prefer Thanksgiving because I love sitting down watching football with my brother and my father, brother-in-law, and just eating and not having to do anything. Like this year, I'm going to be leaving Austin Thanksgiving morning to head to Houston, and my sister is cooking dinner for everybody, and so I don't have to do jack nothing.
Yeah,
I think I'll have one hand will be with beer, and the other will have like shrimp cocktail or something, and the other thing or whatever appetizer she does before. I mean, I don't know about you, like we always we'll do appetizers and stuff all morning long, and then eat turkey at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. That, I mean, Thanksgiving is great because it is, you know, who eats dinner at 3 p.m? But, you know, that's like kind of how it goes on Thanksgiving Day. And
I will scratch that. Okay. My fucking mom and dad do now, but it's like nuts. When I go visit, it's like, I can't believe it. It's like, we go to dinner at 3 and I'm like, fucking dinner at 3 o'clock?
For me, so like, I'm
at work. Don't eat lunch. Yeah. But you might want to eat something later on. It's like the most nutso thing. But teach their own, I guess, you know.
Definitely. Yeah, I think
they're old people. I mean, they're 16. They're in their 70s. So, I mean, they're just getting old.
Right. I think part of it, too, is, as you get older, I think that there's the expectations and everything that goes with Christmas and just more pressure with Christmas. And Thanksgiving feels like to me, you just get the good part, the family, the camaraderie, hanging out. No pressure. You're just having a good time. And there's the point of the day is just hanging out and eating, and you know that's like real easy to take care of on the intellectual level. Well, Christmas there can just be so much and adds to it. So yeah, I always really enjoy Thanksgiving, so I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, I mean back in the '80s it used to be a huge wrestling day, and now it's not even close. I can't imagine anyone running on Thanksgiving in wrestling. It's just, I mean, it used to be one of the bigger drawing days of the year for wrestling. And now it means absolutely nothing. I mean, like the original Star Survivor Series ran on Thanksgiving and Starcade ran on Thanksgiving. I mean, there's plenty of other shows. I mean, I know World Class ran a Thanksgiving show. I mean, they all would run Thanksgiving shows, and now not even close. History is like, it means nothing on Thanksgiving and wrestling. They were like tied at the hip.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's nothing like that anymore.
And our boy Marco Stunt took, I guess, a bump and broke his freaking leg, man. That's a tough break, no pun intended.
Yeah, and it the whole thing was very interesting. I guess it was on the Janela GCW show here in LA, which I don't know what happened. Maybe I missed it, but initially when I saw the tickets on sale on Eventbrite, it looked like the venue was being run somewhere in Hollywood. There was a bunch of different prices for tickets. Stuff was selling out. It seemed all this and that, and then out of nowhere, it seemed like it's being run at the Hi-Hat, which is the same place that Suburban Fight Club or whatever runs the No Ring shows. And it's just a small bar venue in Highland Park, so I had no clue what happened there. It seemed like they switched venues last minute. That venue is ridiculously small for the amount of people I would have thought would have been there for the GCW show to be running with a ring in the building. And then, the story comes out. Marco got injured, taking some kind of bump. Who knows? I haven't seen it yet, but poor guy.
Well, yeah, but definitely a broken leg. I mean, yeah, they had to rush to the surgery. And a guy that size, that can't be good. I mean, I don't think a break is good, period. But having someone that small and one of his things is, you know, being able to do these type of I mean, he doesn't like he doesn't gain spots or anything, but he's a guy who, I mean, his size to get over, he can't just, you know, work a headlock for 20 minutes.
No, I mean, he's got some good charisma, and maybe he could at some point kind of get into that. But look at even Rey Mysterio. We talked about him and his resurgence of looking really good up until before he showed back up in WWE here, which I haven't seen much of that yet.
Yeah.
It was like even at his age and after how many knee surgeries, the matches that he had, you know, the Will Ospreay one comes to mind really good. But it was they're still flying around stuff with Ricochet.
Yeah.
You know, he's still flying around. So it is even with all the charisma in the world when you're that size, I think it's hard to get out of that style.
Yeah, it's true. And so, you know, our thoughts are with him and stuff. Just absolutely nuts. And you know, but hey, we have a couple of shows to review this week. We're doing an early A for Thanksgiving, and B, you know, why not? We're doing one of them is the NXT TakeOver show, so that just happened. So we can do it in, you know, a lot earlier than we normally would. But we're also looking at the Southern Underground, Southern Underground Pro Sup. All Eyes Are On Me show with the debuting Daniel Maccabee. It opens up with an announcement of a match that will be at the family reunion show in Mania. So that's a big feather in the cap. So they're going to put a match out there. We don't know what it is yet, but you know, that's exciting stuff. You know, what are you thinking?
Yeah. And you really don't know what it is now with Marco on the table or off the, you know, on the DL list off the table to be booked because he's been such a big part of Sup. You would think that they're showcase match for Sup would involve him, but you know, we'll get into it when we go through. We've got a, you know, a new champion, and he's obviously got something on his mind match wise so that could be it as well. It might be the perfect place for it to get Sup a little recognition,
and I mean, who knows with Mark will be ready by Mania.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I mean, who knows, I mean, we haven't heard a whole lot, just that, I mean, emergency surgery. So yeah, I mean, it just, who knows?
What's
but
Mania?
Mania's
usually late March.
April,
it...
yeah, first of April, late March. This is April.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that's 4 months from now, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, should be enough to recover, you think. But, I mean, you never fucking know.
You know, I mean, they put screws in there from what I saw. I think he got opened up and screws and everything, so you never know.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I don't want to... I'm sure we'll hear more sooner than later. We have up with SadConf with his, yeah, I'm not sure if I like the name.
I hate it. I 100%
hate it. Yeah, okay. You're in there. I'm with you. I don't like it. You convinced me. and that's Donovan, Don Guarini and Kevin Koo. And they wrestled the Carnies. And you know what? And this is part of the first round of the Sup Tag Team Tournament. I see my boy Ben, my buddy Ben. He's not wearing his ugly ass Patriot jacket or his shitty ass Celtic jacket or his Boston Red Sox jacket. So there must have been a dress code at the bar. That's the only thing I can think of. But, you know, besides Ben's ugly ass jacket that I didn't see him wearing. Just kidding, buddy. I did not like this match at all. And, I like both these guys' teams, but it looked like they're on two different pages. It looked like the Carnies want to do a little bit more shtick. SadConf wanted to do a little bit more of like a work-ready match. Koo's a guy who works hard, but I don't think he's a nuanced worker enough. And I don't know if Dom's is nuanced enough to work shtick. And people where people would buy into it, and I thought these guys were on two different pages. There wasn't much of a shine. It felt like this thing was kind of forced. I mean, I honestly didn't like the match at all. I was shocked after. I mean, I was just putting over the Carnies as a great act, And I like these guys. I put Sad Comp over before as, like, you know, being these ass kick, serious ass kickers. Put them together, it didn't work for me at all. Did you have a different feel on this?
No. Did you give a rating?
I just gave it the check mark because I'm okay. afraid I would give it a dud. I really didn't like. I mean, I legitimately hated this match.
Yeah, I can see that. I give it 2.25. I guess I didn't dislike it as much as you, but I definitely see where you're coming from. Had similar, really very similar issues with Kevin Koo in the last match that we reviewed for Action, where it felt like because he wasn't the focal point and the star as much. Even I've talked about him, even in multi-man matches, he does well to make himself stand out usually when that's his role, but when he's just kind of in there, and this felt like that. You talk about the nuance of the work. He honestly, I would say out of everyone, he felt the most out of his element on what he's the best at. And then yeah. I would say the only person in the match who felt the most in their element, was able to shine, was Kerry. I thought that Kerry was the only one who looked good in here. And you could even argue, though, that he looked good in here, maybe doing a little bit too much. And like that kind of was the problem there, is that he, you talked about it. I mean, they're trying to do some stickiness, but he's also standing toe to toe with both members of Ring Comp repeatedly, or Sad Comp. And like repeatedly, I think that that kind of didn't help. We talked about their aura and their presence should be more protected as badass ass kickers. And by the end, I think they did, but I felt that Kerry really took a little bit too much and really in some ways was like guzzling both of them, fighting them both off pretty easily. So while he looked really good and felt like he was doing his normal stuff, it didn't necessarily fit with the psychology of the match overall. I felt like then you got Nick Iggy and Dominic Guarini, who both to their own degrees were really just kind of there. Nick Iggy, we talked about, I mean, we had that Effie match and stuff that I think was probably the best comedy match of the year for me and one that really stands out. And that's kind of where Nick Iggy kind of shines. And here he really wasn't showing any personality. He's hitting, even just the fact that he felt out of his element for that regard, there's also doing stuff like he's doing, what is it? The tree slams, repeated tree slams. And I'm just like, he feels like he's a different wrestler. He doesn't feel like Nick Iggy in here in this match at all. He feels like he's just completely out of his element. Dom, to a lesser extent, doesn't feel like he's getting to shine at what's best for him, but he's more just there. I would say compared to everyone else, who Kevin Koo and Kerry Offal being kind of the two opposite ends of the poles on the other side of things. So it was, it was definitely not the match that I would have expected on paper. That's for sure.
Yeah. I had high expectations, like, oh, this could be really good. And I felt it was like a real styles clash and they just didn't gel at all. Then we get a three way with Mitchell and Danhausen and Trip Cassidy. What were your thoughts here?
I thought it was fine, if not a little fast. I gave it 2.25 also. I felt that the opening stuff with the crowd really just Trip Cassidy's entrance was fucking annoying for me, that there was people trying to stand him down. It was Mitchell. Craig Mitchell's entrance was annoying to me, as there's people like trying to stand him down face-to-face to him. And one guy even like grabs him and tries to kiss him when he's trying to like stare him down or whatever. And that's just annoying to me, that the crowd is showing no respect to the workers. And like we talked about it, but taking advantage of a guy in a work setting is not really fair. You're just trying to make yourself look good. And realistically, it's like, he's not going to really swing on you, but that doesn't mean that he couldn't actually kick your ass.
Yeah. I think, I probably would have, like, I would have begged off just cause I feel, you know, I'm definitely not trying to get myself over at an indie show. So,
right.
Just dumb.
Don't remember that no matter how cool you think you look at the indie show, you're still just the coolest guy at the indie show. So you're still at a wrestling show no matter what. But yeah, real, real high pace action. I would have liked anyone to have really felt like they were the ring general or the driving focus of the match. It really felt like it was a lot of back and forth, your turn, my turn, with no real narrative. You know, I thought that Mitchell, clearly the biggest heel in the match, as far as I could tell, clearest heel, even with the other two guys kind of playing brooding, they come across more like anti-hero kind of characters rather than heels. So I would have really liked to have seen Mitchell get to be the focus and be the heel, and the other two kind of playing babyface to him, but you really didn't get any of that. But that said, the action was good. The spots were, everything was actually very crisp for having the moving parts. So this was a match where I've kind of been on my screed lately about three ways and the issues with them intrinsically. This was a match where the work itself, the actual mechanics of the match, didn't suffer from the three-way dynamic. They actually did a good job, but the psychology of the match suffered because of the three-way dynamic, because it felt like they really threw that out the window.
Yeah, I'm with you. I went a star and 3/4. Everything was solid, but yeah, it just didn't seem like there was a real leader here leading this action. And like, you know, Mitchell's a good heel, but I don't think he's a ringleader. Danhausen definitely needs to be led, and Trip Cassidy is, you know, Trip Cassidy. I'm not a huge Trip guy. He's okay. I think he's definitely more gimmick than worker. It was solid, but it was just your turn, my turn, let's do these spot type of thing. Didn't do anything for me. Well, Zach Thomas versus Cabana Man Dan, the next match I enjoyed. But it was a fun little match. Dan Shine was a lot of fun, I thought. The heat they get is that Zach Thomas gets is good. Crowd is behind Dan the whole entire match. Just a fun bout. 2.5 stars. You know, they just had a good, fun bout, which I think they desperately needed after the two opening matches. They were desperately looking for a match that connected with me, and then they did here. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, very similar, other than the flip-flop chop with the crowd spots that were a little too much. I thought that Dan did a good job of really making himself come across like a serious babyface throughout the match. Real good underdog style. Realistically, great just little heel babyface match. I thought that that Zach Thomas had a good presence, had a good look, and came across real easily heel and dislikable. So I was into that dynamic. I give it 2.75, and I thought, yeah, I think if Dan Cabana Man Dan just dropped the flip flop chop, which I know it's over like Rover, and the crowd's into it for the work. But other than that, I mean, he can be a good little underdog, plucky babyface. And
yeah, I would keep the chop. That's,
yeah, I mean, it works. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It works. So there's no reason to really drop it. But you know, if he wanted to be serious, I think the thing is, if he decided to go all serious, I think his ceiling is not that high to where it's really worth it.
Yeah, no, so, yeah, he's in the role that he needs to be in. Yeah, if he tried to, yeah, no, that'd be a failure. I think this is the perfect spot for him and perfectly booked where he can go in and have a good, fun middle of the card match. And he has upward mobility where if you want to, you could, you know, with the right heel, put him on. Not, I don't want to say up top, but he could work a semi-main event type of match.
Yeah, and he's a perfect setup guy for Marco because they're both small. Yeah. So him as the, you know, he could be the semi-main event, really just getting a heel, put some heat on a heel before they go up against Marco as the top guy. Yeah. I think works really well. It's a great dynamic.
He could be a gatekeeper type guy too, yeah. Then we get the six-way match. Stokely Hathaway, or whatever this was. What'd you make of this, man?
I mean, this is Stokely show. I mean, I just give it 2 stars. Stokely has great personality and is able to kind of, you know, keep the dynamics and keep stuff interesting. But it really felt like it was just interstitial kind of little spots of Stokely doing bits and routines and basically doing like sketch videos throughout the middle of a match that for some reason these guys kept trying to wrestle in the middle of Stokely's comedy show, you know? So realistically, it wasn't great, but Stokely's got so much personality and fun ideas that it kept it interesting throughout, and it broke up the monotony of what could have been just another, you know, scramble match with six people just doing spots after spots.
Yeah, well, yeah, I gave it 2 stars also, and I enjoyed it for what it was, which is I enjoyed it when Stokely was in there, but everyone else I didn't give a flying fudge about. But, yeah, that's about it on that match. And then we get Gary J versus O'Shea Edwards, which I liked. I give it 3.25. I liked the fight on the floor to start. I thought there was a nice little shine by Gary J. Loved O'Shea's power spots on the heat during the heat. The running punch he does is really nasty. JRJ gets a nice little comeback. But man, this crowd, this was definitely, was started stitching their alliances to O'Shea Edwards. And that super heated angle they had at SCI weekend is kind of out the window. And I mean, again, it definitely gets, I mean, obviously, I don't know. I mean, they totally took the company in a different direction at the angle at the end of this show. But the fans, I couldn't believe, were already cheering for O'Shea Edwards over Gary J at moments in this show. And Gary J has been a super popular guy at SUP, so that really surprised me. But it seems like, you know, they had that really kick-ass angle, and they didn't get any, no, I don't want to say any, but they did not get the mileage out of it that they easily should have, because that was a kick-ass fucking angle, and one of the well-done angles of the year. And in the grand scheme of things, it meant absolutely nothing for the company, and that's a shame, because they are pretty much, we'll talk about it when we get there, but it's clearly they're the new angle, new direction the company's going, which is a little I don't know, odd or what, but it's definitely different. What you make of the match, man?
The match, I think that Gary did a really good job of, clearly at the time watching it, it was questionable, but I thought that he did a very good job of subtly turning O'Shea, and then it makes sense as the night progresses. And so I get what you're saying, the crowd was into him, but Gary did stuff like, you know, he jumped O'Shea before the bell,
yeah,
which makes sense in the setting, because he's going up against the bigger guy, and he wasn't overtly heelish of him in any way, but it was little stuff like that that does kind of give the audience a little bit more leeway to heel on him. I mean, Gary sold really big like he always does, but O'Shea really just took the fight to him and kicked his ass. There wasn't a lot of heelish tendencies to him. He took big bumps that made O'Shea look really good, especially like the big, you know, stalling vertical suplex on the floor, and then he's running him into the post and stuff like that. Like, it really was a good way to shine up O'Shea that when I was first watching it, I did not necessarily perceive, because I was with you. I'm like, this is the big bad. I think that O'Shea Edwards is a guy that has a great presence, great work, super believable. And I'm just like, awesome heel. Why is this, you know, why is this happening? Why are they working this way around him? What's going on? And then, of course, you know, when we get to the main event angle, it kind of makes more sense. But yeah, I mean, that huge angle where what they bury, Dylan in the Texas flag and all the babyface and everything. It's like, it did really feel like after this huge angle, it flamed out so big, because you got, you know,
and I had a ride in a car ride home with Dylan's dad kayfabing us.
Yeah, the whole thing, but then that everything about that went through the window, and it's, you know, part of it is Curt Stallion disappears from the company, and that obviously hurts where that's going, and then you've got, you know,
the and then there's no AJ Gray on this show.
Yeah, AJ Gray seems to be disappearing, so they have to like call the audible. Great match, though. I thought here, I gave it 2.25. I thought that like I said, if as a match to help get O'Shea Edwards over as a babyface, I thought it worked really well in that regard. And Gary J looked really good and told the story of being super valiant, trying to fight the much bigger man. So it came across in the match really well, but it was really questionable to begin with. I just didn't, it's, you know, it's hard to predict where they were going with it, because I wouldn't have expected a heel turn so fast, or
yes,
you know, a babyface turn for O'Shea Edwards so soon after the big angle. So it, yes, did make it kind of wonder what the fuck was going on.
Yeah, it felt very sudden, and it didn't feel like it in the end. The angle ends up, I didn't feel like it was earned. It felt like it just did. It didn't feel like it was being, it wasn't. Well, it didn't seem, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm sure we'll hear from somebody in the company who might, you know, tell me, no, we were putting the foundation down here. I just didn't see it, and I didn't pick up on it at all. If that was the case, where they were going in that direction. Then we get Brick and Alley Cat versus Jordan, Jada Newman, and Teddy King. What were your thoughts here, man?
I mean, might be my match of the night, honestly.
Okay.
Really loved it. I mean, I almost see like the Alley Cat and Brixer team as like Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior or something, or maybe they're double Ultimate Warriors if you believe what people have to say about some of them, I guess. But like the way that they're both super over, that I can definitely see that they're limited, but they hit their key spots here really well. And the crowd is super into them, just kind of doing power moves and showing off and playing into that. And the crowd dug it, you know, and the heat from it was huge. And I mean, no question who's the heels and the baby faces. The jock team bump around, stooge, show ass, but then also take fucking shortcuts and be just complete pricks, get heat the whole way through. Yeah, and you got the babyface team, like I said, that they may not do a lot, but they sell and they're engaging. And when it's time for them to fire up and fight, that you believe in the fire. They really just kicking ass and going for it. And just, I mean, I thought this was done super well. Both, like I said, both teams with really great babyface heel dynamic, and the crowd bought into it hook, line, and sinker, which helps too. There's no question. It's not like the O'Shea thing where you kind of question why are they so firmly behind a guy who they should, you know, theoretically still see as a heel. The injury at the end really kind of sucks. I don't know exactly what happened there, but it looks like Teddy King messed up his leg coming off the top rope to the floor, and I don't know if that was real or not. But it definitely came right before the finish of the match, so it may have been planned, and it may also have been an audible when that happened that they just finished it there. But yeah, I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought that everyone knew their roles perfectly. The crowd was red hot the whole way through, and the match just completely delivered exactly what it needed to. And for me, it's like, yeah, I mean, Brixter feels like, you know, 1A. He feels like the guy right behind Marco, you know. He feels like ready to be the top guy for SUP. The crowd just loves him in everything he does.
For crowd connection, for sure.
Yeah. And Alley Cat is setting, just like a step behind him, really. I mean, Alley Cat is pretty close to just as over. You know, she's not quite there, but, you know, she's the B, I think. I would put Marco and Brixter as 1A, 1B, or whatever.
And they don't use a lot of females, but yeah, but clearly Alley is their number one lady.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's no question on that.
Even though I still think she needs to clean up the gimmick a little bit. Or maybe I think she's outgrown it, maybe because I've seen it so long here in Texas, because that's where she started. I just feel if she wants to be taken serious as a top tier talent, I think she needs to get her more mature gimmick. But I think it still works. So no, I mean, maybe not. But I just feel if you want to be viewed as I just don't think the Alley Cat will ever get invited to the Performance Center type thing, you know. Right. But she has the talent where she could. I mean, I mean, she's losing her weight, and she definitely needs to work on her body a little bit, you know, for that. But I mean, sure, her work's there. She's getting better and better, and she's incredible at engaging the crowd. I like this too. I didn't like it as much as you, but I still liked it. I give it 2.5. And yeah, Brick is that guy. He's like a throwback, old school baby face. Reminds me a lot of like a cross between Chick Donovan and Lex Luger in a little bit. But man, I absolutely love Jaden and Teddy King. I think that tag team has a lot of legs as a heel group, and you can put them on top as your tag champions, and I think they get a lot of heat, and I think they're just gonna, I think they're just scratching their surface of their potential as a tag team. I think they have some serious legs there. Then we get the debuting Danny McAbee, versus the Warhorse. I really like this. I gave it 3 3/4. Now, do you think this audience wasn't really ready for Dan?
Not 100%. And I think part of it is just not being familiar with him. And I think
exactly. And almost like, you know, it's tough. Matt Workers, it's a lot more difficult to get over, especially in a bar setting where people are drinking, where they're used to seeing guys pull fucking knives on each other. Yeah. And we've seen, you know, pictures of guys' cocks as finishes and stuff. So I mean, he's a guy who I think he's a tough to get over immediately. But once you start seeing him work, you're like, damn, the guy can work. And to an educated fan, I think like I know my friend Ben was just loved him. I was just blown away by him. That was his first time seeing him work. And so I can understand. I think from the guys who watch a lot of wrestling, they appreciate him more than the girl who's had six drinks or what have you at the show type of thing, who laughs at Effie, taking cock pictures and stuff.
Right.
So he had a tough thing. He's coming in cold, and he's facing a guy who the crowd really likes in the Warhorse. But I really like it. I give it 3 3/4. So, Parnell, taking Maccabee out early. I loved Maccabee's arm. It's pronounced Maccabee, right?
Yeah.
Arm bars, counters. I love that. Maccabee has so many ways to get to the arm, which I really loved. Maccabee really putting the work in on the arm. I was totally digging all that. The heel hook counter that he does was just fucking awesome, and I love how Warhorse is really selling that leg. Really good stuff. I give it 3 3/4. I thought they had a really good match, and man, yeah, I mean, Maccabee needs to be he needs to be Dan definitely needs to be booked on a lot of different places. He has a really interesting look to him. I think he has a lot of legs on the indies right now, where he could be, he could be in that, working that style with like the Thatchers and that, like, has a really good sense of psychology and can mat work, and he's a lot bigger. I don't know if it's just Warhorse is just, he's naturally not that big of a guy. But Dan looked pretty, standing next to him, Dan looked like he was 6'2". I don't, you've seen him live, right?
Yeah.
How tall is he?
He's taller than me, and I'm 6 foot, so he's at least
Okay.
6'1", 6'2".
Okay, yeah,
He's
so he's
not.
a big guy. Yeah, he definitely looks like a tight end and stuff like that. And yeah, he really impressed me. This is I mean, I've seen probably about 7 or 8 of his matches, and I've always liked all of them. I thought this was another really strong outing for the guy. And it was in a tough setting for him with the bar crowd, but I'm sure hopefully he'll be back, and we'll see more. I could really totally dig seeing him and Yehi work, or him and Kane. I'd love to see him and Dom going after, to tell you the truth. Him and Koo, I think, would be a really good match. As a, I am I know he worked at Warhorse. I'm shocked that they didn't book him versus Gary J. I think that's a naturally really strong match between the two of them too. What do you think of the match, man?
Yeah, I honestly think that him and Gary J probably could be a naturally better match because of Gary J being so much more clearly a babyface,
Yeah.
and really can play more of the heavy hitting babyface a lot better to Dan. I mean, the thing about it is that this crowd, I mean, this honestly is this is more like Dan's home crowd than he's going to find in a lot of ways. The 3-2-1 battle crowd is a bar crowd that primarily doesn't even really care that much about wrestling, and he's done really well there. But like I said, I think the crowd here, they're just not familiar with him. And I think
Yeah.
when I say that, I don't even necessarily, I don't always 100% believe that you can't get a crowd into grappling, because Dan has proven that he can. He took a crowd that was not a wrestling crowd, and he's taught them about grappling. It's taken time, but the 3-2-1 battle crowd
That's the
respects
thing,
him for
right
his
there. You're
grappling.
absolutely right. Anytime you're trying to educate a crowd, it takes time.
Yeah.
And you got to put the time and effort into it. Because I remember when WCW, when Bill Watts took over, that he was trying to emphasize mat work, and you were seeing a lot and lot of mat. Some of the mat work was really boring, but he was trying to educate guys on submissions and this and that, and it takes time to educate that audience, and it's kind of a lot of like now. I mean, 15 years ago we weren't getting knockout finishes type of thing, but now they're, I don't want to say the norm, but they're accepted, and it's because you've educated the audience in certain ways, and back in the day, wrestling never had tap outs, but, you know, because of the UFC presence, that became a norm, which actually WCW started really was the first company in the U.S. that started really pushing the tap out as getting it over. And I felt in 95, 96, they started doing it. And it just takes time, yeah, to educate stuff, especially when it comes to mat wrestling. And being an in and out isn't going to do it, but it's taking your time and educating them. Yeah, and with the Gary J thing, I think, yeah, like I remember when Rex Andrews, who I think reminds me a lot of Dan, worked to Gary J, and I thought they had a banger of a match, and I would expect the same thing out of Maccabee and Gary J. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's fine. Rex Andrews, funny you bring him up, because when I first heard grumblings that Dan might be popping up around here in these promotions, I may have pitched that someone should book him against Rex Andrews. Because that's a match I'd love to see. But yeah, I mean, you know,
Dan's, I think I pitched it on Twitter myself.
Yes. I mean, Dan's got a great look, I think. He reminds me sometimes of Crispin Glover, the actor, who's also a really good natural heel. Just, you know, he's not... And that's a, you know, he's a famous actor. So Dan's not a bad looking guy, but he does have a heelish look to him that works. It's like,
I'm smarter than you look.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, he might be hurt by wrestling in a shirt. You even hear the crowd say, who wrestles in a shirt when he's coming out and stuff? And you know, that is what it is.
A lot of people that the main event did, both guys.
Yeah, exactly. But people question it and they don't look, you know, it's stupid, but it does hurt some people's kind of perception based on how they look or how they present themselves. But I think that pretty quickly once Dan gets working, I mean, you compare him to, let's say, Zack Sabre Jr., who's another guy who got some body question. People question his body type and as a wrestler. And for me, I think I prefer Dan's style. And I'm not going to say that I think Dan's a better wrestler than Zack Sabre Jr. because a lot of people probably will go fucking ham or whatever. But Dan fights for everything and he doesn't have to. And Zack, a lot of stuff will look a little bit too smooth. And you watch as he, you know, he works from hold to hold. You talked about getting at the arm. I love the octopus, the way he's grinding the elbow into the arm. I loved when he sets up the STF. He's actually working like he's in a fucking wrestling fight. It's not just smooth transitions. It's everything is work and it's fighting. And it makes him, to me, it makes that wrestling genius nickname work because it shows that it's taking a level of work for him to get from hold to hold. And that just kind of shows off the virtuoso. And I think when it's too smooth, when it's very smooth, it can be really entertaining for nerd, like super nerdy wrestling fans like myself. Cause you're like, oh my God, he's so good at this. He's so fast. But I think if you're watching it in the context of it being a fight, seeing someone who has to struggle and fight for everything, it gives you that doggedness. And it does give you that idea of staying cool under pressure and being able to fight through. I think
that's why Shayna and Ronda have gotten over really well because they seem like they're fighting for every hold and stuff when they're working.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that gets better. That gets over better to a wider crowd in general. I gave the match 3.75. Also, I thought that the opening stuff was really done super well and felt like a really good struggle, like you talk about. I thought that once the heel hook counter starts, and then from there into the finish, this match was like almost flawless. The finish,
yeah, I'm agreeing there. I thought it got a little amazing. It was a little slow at the first few minutes, but once Dan was in control, it got really interesting and stuff like that. That's because I appreciate that style of wrestling too.
Exactly. And that finishing stretch I thought was fucking amazing. I mean, both these guys are known for good finishes, but that was a great finishing stretch. And the actual finishing move itself might have my commentary line of the year when Dylan calls out the big lariat and he says, "Oh my God, he's turned him out." And I'm just like, "Oh no, Dan Maccabee has been turned out by Jake Parnell." But yeah, I thought that this great debut for Dan, really solid match. Both guys looked really good. But yeah, I'm super excited to see more Dan getting around and getting to really show off what he can do, especially once crowds get more kind of receptive to him, because this was, that was the first thing, you know, I'm friends with Dan. The first thing I messaged Dan, I talked to him about it. I said, it was jarring to me to have you come out and the crowd was silent. Yeah. Because I'm so used to 3-2-1 battle where the crowd is giving him so much shit and they instantly hate him. And this crowd was just deafeningly silent. And I was just like, ah, fuck. Like, you know, but he delivered. He still delivered big time. It's just, it was funny to forget just how hated he is in 3-2-1 Battle, and then to come in here where people don't know who he is and they just really didn't give him any reaction. But I think he earned a reaction by the end.
I totally agree. Main event time. We get Brett Eisen versus Marco Stunt. What do you like about, what do you think about this?
I thought that Eisen looked fantastic just as a big badass kicker. I thought that Stunt put so much effort into doing everything he could to try to keep him down. I thought that was done really well. Loved Eisen, you know, with the big kickouts and the catches and everything that he was doing. This is quick. I kind of felt like Eisen on the knee, middle finger thing felt a little bit too defiant in a way that didn't make sense for the big monster man in the match. But, you know, it felt more like the plucky babyface standing up to the bigger heel than the opposite. But other than that, I felt like he played his role super well. It felt, I won't say exhibition-y, but it definitely felt like the stakes weren't as high as it should have felt for a big-time title match with the undersized babyface and the big bully monster. And maybe that is because it just felt so, like, how could Stunt possibly win? But I think that goes against kind of what the storyline of Stunt has been, is that he's so good as a plucky underdog babyface that you do buy into him. So it was weird to me that throughout this match I didn't really ever get that fire and that sense of urgency that's from Stunt that you get a lot of other times. But I think that Eisen really held up his own here as the badass ass kicker. I thought it was interesting. He's calling out Nick Gage and, you know, Dylan's talking about it. And I really like that little wrinkle from the storytelling aspect, that the first time we saw Eisen in SUP, he wrestled against Tank, who's, you know, a big time deathmatch guy who was on his way to retirement. He beats him. And then now that he's at the pinnacle of the company, you know, having won the title, still undefeated since then, he's calling out kind of the current top of the deathmatch people as he wants Nick Gage. So it's actually like a nice little kind of consistency in his character of being a guy who wants to fight the toughest, you know, deathmatch fighter type people is what he's interested in. So he had to dispatch with this little runt that everybody's all into, and then now he can move forward. The angle attacking O'Shea Edwards, I like it for Eisen, but I'm not ever a fan of someone becoming babyface by being turned on. I think that that's not the best way to create a babyface, and I understand that in this setting you want Eisen to be kind of the more important figure as the champion in the story moving forward. But to me, I always want a babyface to turn face, you know, on their own, like by their own actions, they're turned babyface rather than being that you just get attacked by another heel and that makes you a babyface. I feel it just feels too wishy-washy to me. I give the match 3.25 star. I loved the action, but like I said, I think that it didn't feel high stakes like it should have.
Yeah, I give it 3.25 also. I thought Marco, it was the big moves. The start was awesome. Trying to, you know, take Eisen out quickly. Eisen cuts him off and straight just tortures Marco's ass. Marco's plucky, never die babyface works here. The low-level drop kick by Marco, and I like the Dylan's and the other guy chopping the tree down analogy. Eisen's elbow was just nasty. It would just shut fucking Marco down. Love the story of good big man versus good little man, and therefore the good big man is going to end up beating the good little man because he's big. I liked it. Eisen KOs Edwards post-match, and, you know, I guess they just completely switching gears and stuff. And I think that Gary J versus O'Shea Edwards was for the number one contendership, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't. I mean, it probably should have been, and maybe okay. It was.
I thought I heard that, and if I did, okay. And then I can. So I understand where it's coming from. And if I didn't hear that, I'm still confused on why this angle happened. Unless Eisen's that guy who just doesn't trust anybody, which we've seen. He's a loner. He looks like a loner. I need to go rewatch that commentary on that match. But you know, I'm not, I prefer O'Shea as a heel, but we'll see where this goes. They're obviously changing directions and using different talent, so I guess that's why they did it. Overall, I'd give it a thumbs up show. It started off a little rough early. But that was the thing. It was like a tale of two shows. Once you got rid of the first two matches, man, I felt they really put together a really good show, man. Where do you fall on this, Tim?
Yeah, I give it an easy thumbs up. I was not super low on either of the first two matches. I also wasn't super high on them. You know, I gave them both 2.25, so slightly above just like acceptable match. But I felt like everything else, even the scramble, which I was probably my lowest star rated match, was easy to watch and entertaining, as I said, because you did have Stokely Hathaway keeping it spiced up instead of just being another spot fest scrambling match. I think that the kind of knockout combination of the top four matches all being above 3 stars, the tag match
yeah.
and the Dan Makabe match, I think both being fantastic, really did help make this a solid show, to where I've said it, I'd have to really go through everything, but I could see me having this as my favorite sup show so far.
Yeah. I could see that and not blink an eye. I wouldn't argue that either.
Yeah, just because there's so much good matches, the storylines. I mean, obviously they're trying to rectify and deal with a bad situation with some of the booking
yeah.
stuff. But I think that they're kind of past the choppiest waters, and they're, I think, going to be able to, from here on out, have the hopefully fix these storylines and have them make a little bit more sense. And I think a good way to definitely get Ison really established as a heel is he beats the most popular babyface and then even turns on his friend who was just trying to help celebrate with him. So I think you can get a lot of heat on Ison off of that. And honestly, Ison is a really good heel. I mean, he doesn't even have to cut promos for me to be very into him as a heel character. He's got a great natural heel charisma, just comes across like a gigantic asshole.
Yeah, it definitely does. Hey, before we get to the NXT TakeOver review, check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts along with match reviews, features, and retrospectives, review of wrestling books, video games and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances, non-wrestling TV shows, and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at the Pro Wrestling Only forums. We've been online for over a decade, and with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads, our message board is my phone just went out. Let's take a pause. No, just kidding. I'll get it back up. We've been online for over a decade with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads. Our message board is a vibrant community all its own, whether you want to talk about a specific match in our matches section archives, take a deep dive into the microscope forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling's past and present. Check out all of this and more at www.prowrestlingonly.com.
Well, now, NXT... on that, they said on the forums you could talk about wrestling's past and present, but we're going to talk about wrestling's future here on NXT, right?
That's right. The future is here. Holy moly. We open up with a Matt Riddle, Cassius Ohno improvised match. What a way to put a guy over. I thought this was well done. For people out there, oh, man, we got screwed out of an Ohno match.
Yeah.
Get over it. You're going to be screwed out of a lot of great Ohno matches. He's there to put people over. Learn to love it, okay? And they put – if this happened on the main roster and this was anybody, this would have made – any type of clout – this would make Matt Riddle instantly, and we've seen it happen before. A lot of times people do the draw, but this is like kind of the Goldberg special, just got Riddle over immediately, and now he's on top of NXT, so to me it worked, and if we get a good, fun match between the two of them on TV, that's just bonus, but I thought how this was laid out and executed was really well done. What about you?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't as annoying when Matt Riddle did it to Trent Seven, because I wasn't looking forward to a Trent Seven match, right? But,
yeah.
But, it's like you said, this is what Cassius Ohno is here for, and learn to love it because he loves it. He's taking as pleasure reveling in getting to do this stuff because this is part of the art form. I understand that people love great wrestling matches, but part of the art form of wrestling is also knowing how to get somebody over. And I'm sorry, but you're right. I don't think there's any better way to get Matt Riddle over than to have him show up and do this after you know, it's just perfect. Hiro talks all this shit, you know, Cassius Ohno talks all this shit about him, and then he just knocks him out in a second. And what about the new toys that you're going to, you know, put in the microwave or whatever? He's got it, man. And hopefully moving forward, this is just like continues with Riddle basically just straight rocket ship to the top, because that's what I expect for him. I mean, obviously, you know.
Exactly. Shayna Baszler, Kairi Sane, 2 out of 3 falls. Wow, they maximized all their time in this. What'd you make of the match, man?
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice way of saying it felt pretty rushed for a 2 out of 3 falls match, but I think that they did a good job of making that make sense. I think I said that their match on the Evolve pay-per-view was probably their least of the 3 matches that they had up until that point, and I would say it's still the least of the 3 match of the 4 matches now. This one's probably either right above it or maybe number 2, but yeah, it felt like a fight, hell for leather at times.
By Evolve, you mean the Evolution pay-per-view?
Evolution, that's what I meant, yeah. They haven't sent these two down to Evolve yet to work the
yeah, haven't gone there for Duke Game of.
That'll be next. The huge spot on the apron, obviously, everyone was talking about, was fucking nuts. And it was really cool to see Shayna do something like that, because she hasn't to this point, which then goes to show that, you know, one big bump can mean a lot when it is just the one big bump that you do, and you don't do it repeatedly all the time. I mean, how many times have we seen Ospreay land right on his fucking neck on the apron?
Yeah.
But Shayna does it once, and people are all over the internet going crazy for it. So, I loved, you know, stuff that felt like a big time fight back and forth, just throwing hands, and like I said, really felt like they're cutting a super sick pace, but which really, I don't know. I mean, the biggest issue I think I probably have with this show would be timing all the way through. I think that the way that they timed everything out didn't make any fucking sense.
Oh, they could have easily taken a lot away from that damn War Games match.
Yeah,
War Games, whenever the match beyond started, you're looking at 7 minutes to the finish at that point.
Right.
That thing, the match beyond was a good 25 fucking minutes, I think. I mean, that thing was fucking long.
It was way, and segment as a whole was way too long. From the time that Ciampa Dream was over to when, you know, the rest of that show was like an hour and a half, and it was fucking insane, because it's like half the show, and they filled it up with packages and all this other bullshit and entrance and everything, so it was just, they could have cut so much. The hoopla with all the girls around on the outside was good, and hopefully if we do any more interactions between these two, it's interactions between the two groups and no more singles matches from them for a while, because it does feel like they've gone.
Yeah, but if we don't get a 6-man on TV real soon, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, and then you can cover up for the girls that are maybe the greenest.
Yeah.
But yeah, all in all, good stuff. I gave it 3.5 stars for the match itself, but it definitely, I don't know, the timing on this show, like I said, overall is the biggest issue. And this match was part of that, because this match probably should have gotten more time with the
call. I do agree. I totally agree there. What'd you give it?
3.5.
Yeah, I went 3.75. I enjoyed that first Paul, all Shayna. I mean, all Kairi Sane early on. But then Baszler's horsewomen come out and it forces Kairi Sane to tap out. I like that already. Second fall, Baszler just destroying Sane with the DDT on the apron, sets up a comeback, and then we get the equalizer. The third fall, I love I really like the shenanigans. We get to see Dakota Kai come out, and it makes sense, the story, because Shayna Baszler was a bully to her, and now she's come out to rescue her, Kairi Sane, and then who's the other girl?
Io Shirai.
Yeah, Io Shirai.
I'm sorry, Io.
And hits that incredible move. But Baszler's able to put out Kairi Sane. Just really, yeah, it was all action. Yeah. No, all go, but they still gave us some story. And make no bones to pick here. There's a reason Dakota Kai's there, and that's to carry the selling of the baby faces and to make the two other girl horsewomen look pretty good.
Right.
And that's what her job's going to be if they do a 6-man, is to, you know, sell some more.
One of the good things here to take away too is that, like you mentioned it with all the hoopla and everything going around on the outside, is that it really feels like Shayna, you know, Shayna honestly kind of felt like she was done and ready to go and didn't have anything else to do. But now I think this second title reign feels different, and feels like she's like got a fresh coat of paint with having the act and doing more
yeah.
hoopla and being less just a straight up ass kicker. I think it'll yeah. be fun to see that development in her in this title run.
I totally agree. And then we get Aleister Black and Johnny Gargano. I give this 4 stars. I like Gargano using his speed and the mind games early on. Gargano's cocky, I'm smarter and a better wrestler than you, heel type works. A big knee sets up Black's comeback. Gargano needs to cut the flash, like the tope DDT. He needs to do something different. When he did the Poison Rana, he could have just easily just done a low blow, you know. If he's going to use something flashy, should he do something heelish to set up the tope DDT? He need to do something, like maybe do something. But that's what hurt Seth Rollins on his main heel run when he first started, was he was doing all these flashy moves, but he wasn't setting him up like a heel should. And I have no problem I'm a heel doing a flashy move, but if he's going to, he really should, or she should, protect it and protect. Remember, you got to protect what you are, and that being a heel, and you don't want the crowd you definitely don't want the crowd to turn here. I love Black getting the knee on the tope. That was nasty. Gargano made Black look like a dummy at one point, but then it just surprised it because Gargano starts getting pulverized. And him, so I was shocked that he lost because I'm like, wow, they just turned him heel. So that's a new, fresh character. And it was the same reason why I was like surprised why I turned Daniel Bryan heel to go versus Brock if all you're going to do is beat him. You get this fresh turn. And then you kind of knock the legs out from under it. So I kind of wonder where, if they have Gargano earmarked somewhere, if it's on the main roster, if it's 605 or something else. It just feels like he's definitely off. It feels like NXT has definitely closed the book on him. It feels like, anyway. What do you think of the match?
I give it 3.75. I felt that what you said about Johnny doing too much flashy stuff was also kind of exacerbated by the fact that Black really feels like he's toned down his offense and his style and matches to where he does very little. And so I think that that's part of, like, it makes Gargano stand out and shine even more.
Here's something I saw Johnny P tweet. Do you feel they might move Black to the UK brand? Just because he feels like he'd be a bigger deal over there?
I don't think so. I think it's possible, but I think it would be a major waste. And I do think that this match and this feud was about establishing that he's still on a path that I think is much bigger than something like that. Honestly, okay. He feels like a guy who's very much set up to be treated as a big deal, even on the main roster. I mean, his rise to becoming NXT champion really felt very clandestine in the way that he was, like, very much, like, you know, presented as this is it's just a matter of time that he's going to be the top guy. And then he's back here, and I think he's still being presented as that top guy. And that's part of
it. To me, he has a great look, but he has a unique look that I've never really seen get over really well in the WWE. And right. That's mixed martial art kicker guy, you know. We'll see.
Definitely. But I think that that's part of, too, this when I talk about the style being toned down, is that he's has a few things that he does that then everyone can just get behind. He's very WWE-fied his moveset, where it's super limited and it's very familiar so crowds can get into it. And I think it can work. The spot where Johnny was in between the rings, I thought just looked so fucking stupid. Like, it didn't make any sense that Black had just kicked him in the face. He's bouncing off the other ropes, and then I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be as a counter. He was pole vaulting in, maybe looking for the slingshot spear, and gets kneed in the face. But it was like Black was just on offense. It didn't really feel like a counter. So it was just a really weird move. And that was like probably the most glaring thing in here that just felt so shoehorned in to try to do something that, you know, you would think would look cool on paper as a counter or whatever. Otherwise, great action. Like I said, very WWE-ified, but the booking was weird, having Gargano go down the way he does. Like I said, I think it's just establishing that you don't forget that Alistair is a top-level guy. And they even on the commentary, as soon as it's over, it's like, now he turns his attention back to the championship, which I think is important, that what they're trying to establish here is that he's still a top guy. And in a lot of ways, they probably want you to think of him as still the top guy who didn't really lose his title. He got cheated out of it, you know, and then got fucked out of his chance to win the title back by getting injured. So I think that's kind of more the point there. So to the idea of him going to the UK, I could definitely see where the thought process comes in, but to me, I think that they've got him earmarked in a big way to where he's moving up to the big time main roster. I don't think he's going to be going to NXT UK anytime soon.
Okay.
Gargano heel run is on a questionable trajectory based on the loss, like you said here, based on a little bit of his wrestling needing to clearly be more, I think, established as a heel, but a lot of it was really good. You mentioned it early on, kind of the heel work that he's doing here was a nice refresh for his character as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing more heel matches for him, just to hopefully get more established in it and really think about the psychology of being a heel compared to a babyface when it comes to what he's doing and how he's doing it, where he's placing it, stuff like that.
Yeah, because I could understand him turning heel because, you know, he's lost so many big matches as a babyface, and, you know, you hit your last, you know, you want to hit the reset button or you get your last chance type thing, and I don't know. I think it would have worked better him turning heel in a match as opposed to attacking him type thing. Like, I could actually buy maybe they're working on a babyface match, and then Gargano low blows him, kind of like what Daniel Bryan did to AJ Styles. I think I could have bought that turn better than this the convoluted thing that we got on TV for the last couple months or whatever.
Right, and one weird thing I was thinking about with that story too is that the idea that it happened from him attacking Black before the three-way or whatever, I guess what was going to be a three-way turned into a singles, is interesting because that then puts the storyline that Gargano had already done that and basically had started his heel turn before the point where the crowd was clearly turning on him, which makes that all even more awkward.
Yep, totally. Ciampa versus the Velveteen Dream. What you make of this one, Tim?
Okay, so I feel like everyone's talking about the Hulk Hogan thing and what does that mean for the shtickishness of Velveteen Dream. I've been seeing a bit of that. I get it, and I really don't know how I feel about all of it. Like, realistically, I don't know where I come down on the idea of Velveteen Dream seeming to constantly be doing stuff that references Hulk Hogan, like, at all times. I get it in the idea of, like, you know, referencing an all-time great and what's old is new, and kind of something that I talked about it with, like, the Vader gear on Dave Mastiff last week, that there's people who don't know what it is. But I feel like this is just – it's so, like, blatant that it is a bit kind of over the top. And it feels – in some ways it feels crutchy to me. Like, it's not something that Dream needs to be doing, because I think he's got his own character and his own thing pretty down pat that where he doesn't need this, and he really only breaks it out on takeovers, which makes it even almost kind of weirder that it's like his thing is to cosplay Hulk Hogan on takeover shows.
I think it's one of those things. I think he just wants to stand out on the takeovers,
right? So yeah, but it's just, it's so weird how much he goes to Hogan. That said, this match I thought was done really well. I think we talked about toning down your stuff for your heel style. I think that Ciampa was able to really be basic, but really fucking vicious. The chin lock chokehold stuff was just brutal. And it was just a chin lock, but Ciampa worked the fuck out of it to make it, like, really feel just nasty. Dream, I thought, looked very good. Heroically, valiantly fighting back, selling, bumping, everything I thought was done.
And the dude's charisma is off the fucking chain.
Yeah. I mean, just very natural charisma. Very just like, just knows how to do certain stuff. Like, the finger point I thought was really good. And that's what I talk about. Like, that subtle reference stuff is good. But then, you know, then he kind of ham fists with all the leg drops. But even that still works because he's firing up and the crowd's getting into it. And, yeah, I mean, this was really, again, basic, but it's funny. It kind of, in some ways, is like the tag team match where I also wrestled or referenced the kind of Hulk Hogan-ish of it. This was done pretty basically with the heel being Ciampa, who's honestly probably the better overall wrestler when it comes to just not being green. Dream is clearly much more athletic. But Ciampa really keeping things, you know, kind of low-key and toned down. And then you've got Dream, who's a lot more limited. So the match doesn't have really a lot of crazy spots or really much to it, but a lot
of great heat. And it's just laid out really well.
Yeah, a lot of great heat. Good back and forth with stuff feeling like it's earned. Ciampa's taking not really any huge shortcuts, but definitely being an asshole. The knee stuff from Dream felt a little like, I don't know about that for a babyface. But it worked, I thought. He did a pretty good job with it, but it did feel maybe a little too heelish. Then he's going for the figure four repeatedly, and then you got Ciampa fighting for the ropes, and I think that, you know, that nowadays I think the rope break is not kind of how it used to be, where I think that a lot of people thought of a rope break as a coward's way out, and now I think a lot of people, they kind of get a rope break that gets a pop, like almost a babyface-esque pop for rope breaks. Suplex to the floor was great. Ciampa taking the boot off and the commentary talking about it. I just wish the commentary came across a little bit more factual about what they were saying. You know, they're I think maybe he's taking his boot off because his knee hurts real bad. It's like, even if you're bullshitting, I want to believe you. So just like, give it to me. Oh, he's definitely taking off. I've seen this, you know, many times, guys, you take the boot off or you know, there was one that I loved when it was a Shane Douglas match. I'm trying to remember who it was against. It might've been, I can't remember. I'm not going to be able to remember who the match was, but an ECW match, and Joey Styles throughout the commentary is like, if there's some kind of trick about taking your boot off, Shane Douglas definitely knows it. And that's why he's doing this, because he's that much of a fucking asshole that he'll take whatever cheap shot. And that's kind of what I wish the commentary was doing here. Like, I may not understand this completely, but Ciampa's enough of a dick that I guarantee there's a reason why he's trying to take that boot off. And it's probably because of his knee or whatever injury. So yeah, I would have liked that a little bit more. I like that he broke out Project Ciampa, because I mentioned how he was using the, I guess they're calling it the fairy tale ending for Ciampa, the praying mantis bomb as his finish as he's been a heel. And it really felt like Project Ciampa was not going to be around anymore. So seeing him break it out then made it feel special, because I had basically written it off as not something that happened anymore. You talked about the charisma of Dream, but one thing that I thought that he did super well was he hit that twisting DDT, and he seemed to almost inadvertently land on the title belt, and he took the moment to pause and play to the referee like, oh, fuck, I didn't, that was an accident. And that works so well for his character, as you can buy into him as a babyface, because in that moment you feel for him like, oh, shit, he doesn't want to get disqualified for that. He didn't mean it. Like, are they going to let him get the pin? And he goes for the great near fall off of that. It also gives the second, so it makes sense that Ciampa kicks out. Because it took him a little bit longer to go for the pin, because he was questioning that. I loved when Ciampa got the knee up on the Purple Rainmaker, but Dream saw it coming or predicted it and was then grabbing it to almost look like he was going straight for the figure four again, which plays off of that knee work, which I thought was great. So yeah, I just, really good stuff. Love Ciampa again, such a great heel, as he takes a moment to just fucking lash out at Moro on commentary when they're by the table, just to really show off that he's an asshole. And I thought the finish was really good, because it plays off the history with him and Gargano and that rope hung DDT, but he found a great way to do it on the little metal area in between, which is funny, because going into this match, I thought about how you really don't want to use any of the stuff that's set up because of War Games. You don't want to use the second ring. You don't even want to use that metal grate in between, because you're taking away from possible stuff that could be in the War Games match that's special. But I thought that Ciampa in the title match and doing it that way, that was something that played off of history, but was also extra vicious and played into the setting of the match, was really like the best way that you can do something like that, where you still use the gimmick that you really should be protecting for the main event, but you use it for your own. I gave this match 4 stars. I thought that both guys looked great, and I don't know, coming out of it, I feel like there's been a little bit of maybe people starting to kind of backlash on Dream, which I don't really get at all, because I don't feel like this match was the match where he showed a lack of really being able to follow through on the potential that he has.
Totally agree. What'd you give it match-wise?
4 stars.
Yeah, I went 4.5. I really like this. And I'm a guy who likes a lot of bare bone stuff. So Ciampa's heel work to go with Dream's babyface work connected with me. Fun shine by Dream early on. I really liked all the Hulk Hogan spots. It worked for me. Big bump to the floor, sets up the heat. Ciampa dishes out the punishment. Ciampa's pace. And then he, his face rubs when he rubs his arm all over Dream's face was nasty. Dream attracts the leg, loved the visual, tap out to some great near falls here. Really, really good stuff. And it felt like they had an epic match. Then we get War Games. And you know what? They cleaned it up this year where I only had two teams, and that worked for me. But then, and then I liked, so we had the two teams. I liked, I don't understand why we have a cage still up there, and all they did was lead to shenanigans. I don't like the fact that we don't, they're not caved, there's no top to the cages. So we constantly got cheated by refs and who we played all day long. I don't like that. Then there's the, you know, these guys are all, so I like that we got down to two teams. I hated when they brought the weapons out and they had Undisputed Era logo chairs. Was that right?
Yep.
That's fucking dumb. I mean, beyond dumb. Why do they have logo chairs underneath the damn ring?
I know. It really plays in. I mean, I can almost buy into it with like the conceited nature of Undisputed Era, but it makes them look like dweebs.
Yeah, and then, you know, they're talented enough. We've seen these guys have good matches. We don't need them to be using weapons and just ECW-style weapon matches. What it becomes. War Games wasn't about the weapons. It was about the fucking physicality, and they take all that away by doing what they're doing, and just shows what a disappointment they are when it comes to War Games, how they've prostituted their Dusty Rhodes' a dream. I mean, they had a lot of fun stuff in it, but man, just disappointing. I gave it 2.5 stars. Well, what was your thought?
2.25, way too fucking
Yeah, and
long.
And then, mind you, they also, the match beyond usually at most was 5 to 7 minutes. This thing went fucking forever, at least 30-something minutes, and train wreck.
I think once, you know, and you talked about it, the shenanigans with Pete Dunne was locked in the cage was ridiculous, and maybe
that was dumb, yep.
I don't know if there's something actually up with his knee or something, or what the deal
there was,
is with
he that. Had a knee injury, I get that, but, so I understand that, but, I mean, the whole entire, it just made, I mean, come on, we saw him throw away the key, it just looked dumb.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Yeah, there's a lot of junk, and you talked about the plunder of the chair. I thought the chairs was a good visual when, you know, all of Undisputed Era are finally in the match, and then they've all got chairs, and they just decimate the whole team, and then they're like a pack of hyenas. I thought that was good, but yeah, I mean, after that, the match should go 5 minutes maybe, and I think it probably went for like another 20 minutes at that point.
I think a Roddy Strong chop and a Kyle O'Reilly chop is a fucking hell of a lot more stiffer than a goddamn chair yeah. shot, tell you the truth.
Chair to the back, and then Dunn comes in, and it's just more and more. I mean, he's just, it seems like he's intentionally putting every fucking weapon possible into the ring. It just becomes way overkill.
Yeah.
And then stuff, you know, I've talked about Adam Cole being very smart about this stuff and like a postage stamp, I think, as you said, wrestler type. But this match had some stuff that really felt forced. Doing stereo superplex spots with guys on two different rings, opposite side corners or whatever, there's no impact or anything to it because it's too spread out. It doesn't look cool. You have this big structure with all this cage and then just like two high spots kind of happening so far apart that it doesn't look like, I don't think it gave the same visual that they were hoping for, that it would look like, oh man, there's so much carnage. It just looked too spread out. You know, the rings are gigantic. But there was some stuff to like and it was good, but it's hard for me to give the match a good rating because it was so long. It took up so much time, and to only have a few cool spots, a few memorable moments, doesn't really outweigh how much wasted time there was. The stuff with Kyle and the chain and Pete, that was really cool, but that was like one very small percentage of this super long match, you know? So it's just like repeatedly just so much overkill, just so it just going and going and feels like just going for the sake of going at some points. talked about it, but from the time that Ciampa ended until the time that this happened, the show was about halfway, and there's another hour and a half, basically. Half of the show was just the build-up with the videos, and that's another issue with this takeover was the videos. It felt like they were replaying, you talk about it with the TV, they're replaying videos that we've seen on the TV already, yep. And we're on the fucking main show. Like, you're not, at this point, the show is sold. Theoretically, I should be genuinely hyped to the point where I don't need you to keep putting so much video. You could put videos, sure, but they could be shorter. These feel like these are promo videos trying to sell me on the pay-per-view rather than getting me into the match. The Tower of Doom spot here was just ridiculous. And then what's funny is that Tower of Doom spot really felt like another token stupid piece that was put in there just so that you could set up for Ricochet to do the, you know, double moonsault thing. And it's like, it would have been better if he'd just done the double moonsault without the Tower of Doom, honestly, because the Tower of Doom felt so forced and just so there just as a setup spot for that. So, yeah, I don't think that they nailed it, and that's two times in a row that I really don't think that the War Games, NXT War Games, has really delivered on the promise. But part of that, too, is the history of War Games being so epic that it's going to be really difficult to ever deliver something on that same level.
But them and reinventing the wheel doesn't help. That said, man, I still got to give the show a thumbs up. It's the same thing. It's like the worst ones because you have this main event that doesn't deliver. For me, I mean, I'm sure it did to some people. I'm sure some people loved the 10-man superplex and stuff or whatever it was. But to each their own. It doesn't do it for me. Anything you want to mention?
No. I mean, this show probably would have been show of the year and the best takeover ever if instead of the War Games main event, we had gotten what will probably end up being the main event of Bloodsport, Josh Barnett versus Hideki Suzuki in a shoot fight. You know, that's the storyline here. I mean, if the main event was just a simple match that was good, I think that all the other matches on this show were fucking fantastic. So it would have been like the best takeover of all time almost, you know?
On that note, anything you want to plug, Tim?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me at Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week. Have a great holiday. And we'll catch you when we get back, man. Have a good one, folks.
Fight for today.